The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show here on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 99.9 and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, here we go, folks, and welcome to the lunchtime. Good afternoon, one and all. Here I am. It's Juan. It's John DePietro. We start at 11 and we go until 2 a.m. 1380, 99.9 FM. Always online at WNRI.com or DePietro.com. The new DePietro.com is coming very, very soon. Stay patient. This portion of our program, folks, is brought to you by Tremendous Detail. That's right. For tremendous results, bring your vehicle to Tremendous Detail. I'll tell you, they do such a fantastic job. Stop in and see my friends at Tremendous Detail. It is incredible the difference of what it'll make. Your vehicle will pop. Really just fantastic on what a difference it makes when you bring your vehicle to Tremendous Detail. And you'll see the difference. You'll notice the difference immediately. Tremendous Detail, Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. It's Steve and Ryan. What a fantastic job they do. And whether it's a new vehicle, older vehicle, you can call them at 508-479-5400, 508-479-5400. Tremendous Detail, Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. Well, folks, it's Political Monday. Let's bring him on. He's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. And we want to say good afternoon to our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be here on a beautiful Monday.
Justin, I want to start off just your thoughts on, I was in court on Friday for the arraignment of this Jeff Britt political operative. And it's interesting to me. Kind of had, first of all, one of the first people you see is former rep and someone that they've been trying to get on the bench that so far they've failed to do so. But from West Warwick is former rep Tim Williamson. And he's always there as kind of like an eyes and ears for the leadership. So he's in court. I mean, I watched him. I know him. I said hello to him. I chatted him a little bit. But he literally shows up, sits in. I'm so glad he was included in the Providence Journal. He watches all the proceedings just to make sure there's no curveballs or anything like that. Then he has to report back. And then just a short time after Britt leaving court, there's House Speaker Nick Mattiello. And he's at court, and, you know, you can only imagine when the speaker walks in a courtroom, it is just such an unfair balance. He's an attorney. He's like, oh, this is my other job and so forth. But it shouldn't be lost, the fact that the most powerful person in the state is there, meaning Nick Mattiello, because 3 years ago, there are still questions surrounding his election. And, you know, we've talked about it on election night. He stood up there, and even though he lost, said, oh, no, I won. I won a certain number of mail ballots. And here it is 3 years later, and the guy that kind of put him over the finish line, so to speak, is being arraigned in court. And the next pretrial conference is January 7th, and it sounds like there is going to be a trial. And this is Jeff Britt, and he's arrested and now charged and was arraigned on Friday for money laundering. It is the most powerful person in the state has a criminal charge tied in with his election.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that the article mentioning, or several articles mentioning the speaker was there. Doesn't look like anybody kind of dug in to see what he might be declared to represent in that court at that time. I mean, those are public, should be public records. I think journalists could find it out if they had the interest. But it would be interesting to know what he was there for. But apart from that, yeah, I'm looking forward to the trial in as much as Robert Grenty, Jeff Britt's attorney, has promised they'll be addressing all of the insinuations from the Mattiello camp and trying to set up the idea that Britt is a fall guy for a bigger problem once the trial starts. Now, that could be in large part just an opportunity for a plea deal, which could be, you know, the eyes and the ears, as you noted, with Williamson and Mattiello in the building. The eyes and the ears are all tuned in. So depending how hot they think it's going to get, they might start to put, you know, whisper in the side rooms, hey, wouldn't a plea deal be good here? And that's one of the big possibilities here. And that might be part of why, another indication of that method from Crenti and Jeff Britt is that they have suggested openly, you know, this is overcharged as laundering. It's really just a misdemeanor campaign finance thing, which you say out in the open, perhaps to send a signal. We'd be open to a plea deal of saying, yes, we violated this misdemeanor. So that may be what's going on behind the scenes. But it does seem very suspicious that the speaker happened to be there at the same time and came out immediately after. You almost wonder why he wouldn't, you know, find an excuse to go to the men's room or hang out by the water fountain for a little bit and let things cool down, so it wasn't quite the juxtaposition that it turned out to be.
Yeah, I don't buy the whole thing. I think he was there either to make sure his presence was felt or hoping for a chance encounter or just to remind either Britt or whoever that his presence was there. But these guys, they have stuff delayed all the time. He, I would think, wouldn't want the optics of that. I just found the whole thing suspicious. But as much as he's now just trying to carry on and do business as the speaker, this is going to get into next year. It'll carry over into, we don't know exactly when the trial will be, but I think Tim Dodd, since it is a felony, it'll probably be sometime maybe next summer, maybe even next fall. The speaker could be up for re-election, maybe sometime in the spring, unless it's delayed. But there it was, an unapologetic, and I was in court on Friday. Britt was, it was odd. He was acting, he was like, laughing with people. He was like giddy in the hallway with his friends. The whole experience on Friday to me, it just made you feel dirty by being there. His presence, I've always thought he was odd. His behavior I found to be, he was like laughing and giggling and talking to people. Like it was all, I don't know, like it was like he has a secret. And, you know, maybe for the right price, he'll tell his secret. And Crenti also is puzzling to me because he is the former U.S. attorney. I mean, I asked him walking out, you know, how is it that at one point you were fighting government corruption and now you're on the side defending government corruption? He didn't like that. He wouldn't answer it. He's pretty soft-spoken to begin with. But I found Friday, I'm not saying it's the end of the world and everyone's entitled to be defended, but you have a former U.S. attorney representing this very questionable political operative, and the person whose campaign he was working on, the speaker, was also coming out of the courthouse. It, boy, it just has all the makings of just like a bad, like, crime town crime novel, Justin Katz.
It does. Although, if Britt is the fall guy and the small fry on the way up to the bigger players, having a U.S. attorney as your lawyer, I mean, if that's the presentation, having him as your lawyer is definitely helpful in that regard because it does give that impression.
Yes.
Of this is, I'm actually still fighting against government corruption. This is just a bit player here that I'm representing. So that, it's a good choice of lawyer on Britt's part. And we'll see where it goes, whether it turns out to be, just a show or legitimately what's going on.
Yeah. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is Political Monday. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Well, Justin, last week I thought was another unusual situation where you had, there'd been rumored, it came out in a hearing, and I want to give it the credit to the Providence Journal because they certainly forwarded the story. They got it in play. And that is that the president of Twin River basically received a political threat from someone high up on the governor's staff. And then we found out that it was, in fact, Brett Smiley, her chief of staff, that allegedly made a threat to the president of Twin River. It went back to last June 27th, when they were going to announce the IGT legislation. They wanted to award them this 20-year extension on the contract. And I want to remind people, there's no viable reason for this whole contract extension to take place. The contract is not up. This was something that was set in motion by Don Switzer of IGT with Governor Raimondo. They're very friendly. They are political allies. And there's no legitimate reason why they should be granting this $1 billion extension other than they just have the power to do it. But we learned that Smiley, allegedly, according to the president of Twin River, that he claims that there were three different phone calls. Smiley was very upset and was saying, basically, if you make any noise, if you, you know, really raise a stink about this, that that there's going to be ramifications, that, you know, we can make life difficult for you. They did make noise, and then there were ramifications. The state came down in August. I'd like your thoughts also on how you think Governor Raimondo handled that whole situation.
Well, I think she's the story of this, in my view, because her handling has been really, really horrible. I mean, the whole thing could have been, it appears that Chris Cifolli came out and named Smiley, giving additional details that lend credibility to his story. You know, he called me that day at this time on his cell phone. So it wasn't as if he was just vaguely making vague suggestions about something that might have happened somewhere. But he did that in response to her coming out and sort of casting shade on Twin River, rather than saying there was no threat. That's completely false. And by the way, their company's having a lot of trouble, and I don't know why they're doing this. It just a very poor decision when all she really had to do was say, well, you know, they're an important partner of ours, and I'm going to sit down with them and hopefully we can work this out. I'm sure it was just a misunderstanding or something. It should have been such an easy, especially a political bunt, you know, to get to first base on a complicated problem in the middle of a growing controversy. And instead, her attitude toward Twin River, I think, inspired this escalation. So to me, that's the entire story. I wouldn't be surprised at all if a chief of staff called a company and gave that kind of a pressure on them in the course of conversation. Not to justify it, but it's not a surprising thing for somebody to do in that position. But what is surprising is that the governor would just let this kind of escalate, and it ties in with the whole question of what is she doing with this IGT thing? You know, advocating on behalf of it, going out there and essentially mingling with their employees when they're lobbying for a bill. Lobbying in a hearing. The whole thing is just odd. It's just very odd, and really, the way I wrote about it on the Ocean State Current was to say that we already know Governor Raimondo isn't very good at managing an organization, and I think this episode is really showing she's not really good at politics either, because she's just making it look worse and worse for herself.
No, you're right, Justin, but, you know, you back up for a moment, and this, she is frustrated. She has, this is one of the problems when you have someone that her personal agenda right now is trumping her job as governor, because the deal is not up. There's no reason to extend it. The only reason they're extending this is because, like, why not? She doesn't know how long she's going to be there other than she's term limited. Schweitzer is the lobbyist. He's not even actively involved, but we've heard that he's getting a huge bonus payday if he can make this happen. I mean, it is a $1 billion contract. So they feel, you know, listen, while you're there and I'm there, let's, like, make this thing happen. Let's extend this, because we don't know who's going to come into office after this. We don't know how the landscape could change. And her actions are one of, to me, almost like a brat, kind of in a spoiled, frustrated way of someone who can't get the deal. She tried to ram it through. She keeps repeating the same talking points about number of jobs. I can tell you, Justin Katz, it's not lost on the Paw Sox. In their mind, they're like, oh, so this is what it looks like when Gina Raimondo really wants to go on a limb for someone. But it is not. IGT is saying, give us this deal or we're going to pull these jobs. This should be an element of put out to bid. We don't know what the landscape is going to look like years from now. If they're that good, then they would win the bid. This really also breaks down where, you know, you and I have talked about it, but Schweitzer had to tell Mattiello, right, over breakfast. He was the one to tell him that they were going to do that. All these people are making this money. She is not, her actions are not in a rational, measured way for someone who tries to be, you know, cool, calm, collected. Even to the point that I believe this, Chris Cifolli, I found him very credible. I heard him interviewed, Mark Cristofoli of Twin River. He's an attorney. He knows how important this phone call was. He reports to people. He had to tell them what exactly did he say, and I'm sure he had to say it several times. The only thing that's unfortunate is that they spoke two other times that day, and I'm sure now he wishes he had taped Brett Smiley. But Justin Katz, now And by the way, here's the thing that people need to follow. They did follow through on their threat. In August, they made a big deal that Twin River had some kind of problem with the debt limit. They then leaked that, in fact, it had happened. They want to penalize it. And then it gave Raimondo the ammunition to say, look, this is a lousy company. This is why we should go with IGT. This is no way to treat a private business. I think it's all because she has a personal stake in this, her relationship with Schweitzer. They have donated money to the DNC. They donated money, by the way. They were a big donor, I believe, last year for the governor's inaugural, you know, ball when she was reelected. She has a personal stake in this. And I'm not saying that they're paying her, so to speak, but they certainly fund her activities. She's going out of her way to give a private business, Twin River, a hard time and paint them in an unflattering light just to award the contract to her friends that she wants. That is just, Justin Katz, that's just not the way that government is supposed to operate.
Oh, certainly. The remarkable thing is that her behavior is contradictory to her goals, no matter what those goals are. So even if she's just trying to help her friends out, she's not doing herself any favor by making this the headline, the battle right now. I just saw this morning, Kentucky just extended IGT's contract for 5 years, which is 1/4 of the 20 years she was trying to do with a no bid. So at the same time, you've got that kind of news out there. She's got the focus on this battle with her chief of staff when it could have been so easily defused. And especially in this situation where Twin River isn't just some, you know, private company doing business with the state. I mean, they're a central player in a huge amount of the state's revenue. And it's an area where the state's apparently decided to compete with other states. That's not a relationship you want to be bringing all of this hostility and backbiting in the news media out in the fore. And so whatever her goals are, she's behaving very poorly. And it's so notable that it makes you think we're getting a glimpse of personality here rather than strategy.
Yes.
And it really, after the years we've had her as governor, it looks like the cracks, things are starting to show through the cracks, which, I don't know, it could just be petulance. It could just be her personality. It makes you wonder, though, if there's something much larger on the line here, some kind of deal that for the next step in her career or something like that. I mean, even then, it's a bad position for her to be putting herself in. But that might explain some of what's just baffling behavior on her part.
It really is, Justin. And, you know, let's just step back. And I say this as, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It's Political Monday with Justin Katz, managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. I literally can step back and I have no dog in the fight. Nothing against them. I don't gamble. I don't go to Twin River. I don't know those guys. They don't advertise with me or anything like that. Nothing against them. But, you know, here you have the governor. I mean, I know their significance. I know they are the third largest revenue source. They certainly have grown that facility tremendously. And they've, you know, had some stops and starts and some facing competition, both from Connecticut and then Massachusetts. But here you have the governor saying, well, you know, they need to rehab and it certainly needs a facelift and blah, blah, blah. Like, excuse me. Time out. You're the governor. Why are you pointing those things out? I mean, I haven't been there in a while, but I already am learning from her that they need, you know, they need some new carpeting there and needs a facelift. And she thinks it looks tired and all this other stuff. She's doing her best to demean an operation simply because of her own agenda that she has this situation with IGT. And Justin, you know, equations change. Let's just step back for a moment. Can you think of any other industry where someone is awarded a 20-year contract? A 20-year contract. There's no reason for it. I think it's abuse of power. I don't care how much money it's for, as far as I know they do. But who in this day and age signs a 20-year deal on anything? Like, as you said, you saw Kentucky. That's a 5-year deal. That probably sounds about reasonable. This is someone that feels, I have the power, I have the juice, I'm going to do this now. And they got upset because Twin River, you know, did a scorched earth campaign and said, we want an opportunity to bid on this. And as a result of that, she got upset. She's angry. She then, her and her chief of staff fired back at them and told them to stay on the sidelines. And now this thing is going to be dragging into next year. I agree with you. I think this sits at Raimondo's doorstep the whole way this thing has been handled. I understand Schweitzer saying, hey, listen, while I'm in, you know, it's like someone of, hey, let's, you know, do this while we have the power and the ability to do it. But I still, for the life of me, they didn't even want to go through the process of a bidding process. They wanted, like, no, there's no bid. We're awarding this, and boom, that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, and to turn back to the governor's comments about, you know, Twin River needs a facelift. I mean, a month ago, all the news was how difficult it is for Rhode Island's casinos to compete with the new one in Massachusetts. And about a month ago, I was up there in Boston, and there are billboards trying to advertise Twin River. Come to Twin River. So you've got the company investing, trying to boost its revenue, and you've got the governor out there going, yeah, you know, I was essentially, I wouldn't really go there. I mean, it's all tired. The machines are old. I mean, they need to do a lot of work on that place before it's worth anything. I mean, that's a pretty astonishing, almost cooler and warmer level of marketing genius there on the governor's part. And it's when you put all these pieces together and look at it, it's just so, I don't know, it just seems so typical of the direction Rhode Island's headed in its government.
It is. And you're exactly right. And last night, and I mean, anyone that watches the Patriots on Comcast, NBC Sports, they do their post and halftime, and they do all the shows right from Twin River. And they're obviously not, you know, they're doing that because Twin River is paying them to do that. I give Twin River credit. They're trying the mobile app for the sports betting. I can't believe, like, I'm rooting for them, but I don't blame them for saying, hey, listen, let's just, you know, give us a shot, and we're trying to gut this out, and we're doing the best we can, and they have to deal with all the hoops that the locals put them through. But I have no doubt in my mind that when Smiley spoke to this Mark Cristofoli, I'm sure that's exactly what he was encouraging to do, which was, you know, look at the bigger picture. It's kind of like when someone has to make a decision on who they're going to hire and maybe get promoted, actually. And then they try to say to the person who's not getting the promotion, you know, think of the long term and still have a good career with this company. And we need you to think, you know, big picture here. You're still going to do well and blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, no, we're going to do this no bid deal with IG team. We want you to be a good sport. Just keep your mouth shut about it. I don't blame Twin River and their executives. Like, no, we're not going to be quiet about it. This is wrong. We want in on this. And Justin, another part about this is Raimondo's time here, you know, she's not going to be here forever. They're going to be here forever. What was your impression on House Speaker Nick Mattiello weighing in? He didn't have to weigh in on this, but he weighed in on it. That's number one. And number two, what also troubles me is if you want to be transparent, Raimondo initially, she essentially announced there's not going to be any type of investigation because she talked to Smiley and she believes him. And so therefore, there's no reason for the state police to, you know, kick the tires on this. This is political extortion. This is where you use your office and you are extorting something from someone. In this case, they wanted Twin River to just be quiet or they would make life difficult. Twin River, by the way, they still have the right and the option to, if they want to, file some kind of charges on this. But what did you make of her saying, well, there's no investigation because I don't believe them and I believe my chief of staff? And also, what was your impression of Mattiello? He didn't have to jump in here. He issued a statement very shortly after this saying, boy, I'm very dismayed to hear about this with the governor's chief of staff. That's not the way things should work.
It does become start to look like a political drama, maybe something on HBO. I just, you know, you've got the House is now hiring a separate analyst to look at the deal from IGT. It's an indication of the contagion, really. Once these things start getting going and the personalities get involved and everybody starts to figure out not only their personal differences with each other, but the trying to jockey for political position, you start to get these big battles. And a lot of it, I mean, you could see it coming. And it goes right back to the governor's poor management of all of this. You could see it coming. You're talking about companies with a billion-dollar deal. They're multi-million-dollar companies. They're spending hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars on lobbying. This is a big deal, as strange as it may seem to, you know, the casual viewer. And all it would have taken was a bidding situation. Instead, you've got this with the speaker weighing in. So far, it's somewhat surprisingly, but maybe not given his general persona, the Senate President Ruggiero seems to have the most appropriate attitude, which is let's all cool down and work this out. But instead, we've talked before. I mean, the increasing tensions that are visible between Mattiello and Raimondo, and the headbutting that goes on there. So I'm sure that plays into it a whole lot. And it's not a very effective way to be making deals across state government. That's for sure.
No, and that's exactly what that is. And people should understand that when Mattiello released that statement saying that, that's him busting her chops. I mean, you have two people in very powerful positions, the governor and the speaker, and this is going back and forth trading, where it goes back to the spring when he would not give her everything she wanted in the budget, and then as a result of that, she dropped the dime to the media about the chiropractor, who now there's another grand jury looking into, that a guy on Park Avenue in Cranston is getting $1 million. So then now it's his turn to, hit back. So, you know, now all of a sudden when he gets a chance, he takes a shot at her on this, and it's just all this sniping goes back and forth. It's almost impossible for them to be successful. And you know what else, Justin, really stands out to me? And this has changed. There was a time that if someone told me that the Rhode Island State Police were going to investigate something, that, and this is just my opinion, but there was a time that carried weight. And I'll tell you that now, under this governor, she got rid of Colonel O'Donnell for one reason, because she felt he had too much power and didn't answer to anyone. And that's actually the way it's supposed to work. The head of the state police is supposed to basically be allowed to do their job and not feel political interference. Well, he was pushed out. I mean, they basically insulted the guy, told him they wanted a change. Suddenly he's leaving within 2 weeks. And they initially had said that they were going to change things up. He was going to have to report to Brett Smiley. Every head of the Rhode Island State Police traditionally has always reported direct report to the governor. Well, we're going to change it. From now on, you're going to report to Smiley. I don't blame O'Donnell. Like, I don't think so. I'm not going backwards here. I'm not going to report to Brett Smiley. And Raimondo brought in Anna Sumko, basically for who knows what reason other than things. You know, we've seen the reports have fallen off under her. They had some embarrassing situations. Morale plummeted. She brought in someone that's decent, but just as a resident, I now, to me, and maybe you feel differently, but I just feel, you know, would the state police in this political climate, the way she has now politicized the state police, are we to believe that the state police, if they did an investigation, that they would say, we believe that maybe, you know, Brett Smiley, Governor's Raimondo's chief of staff, may have been guilty of extortion with his treatment of Twin River. I just don't think she would allow that to happen, and that's wrong.
Well, yeah, especially if they're reporting to him, correct? I think what we see here, and this has been characteristic under the governor, and it ties in even to things like her use of public relations staff, often at the expense of allowing the bureaucracy to actually talk to people, and you know, tax experts talk to the media about the tax policy. Instead, you got to go to a PR person to as a go-between. It all kind of ties together. What we've lost a layer in Rhode Island where the person saying we're not going to do an investigation should have been the state police saying, well, we looked at this independently. The governor has not talked to us. This is our conclusion. If they weren't going to investigate, that might raise some questions and some suspicions, but there'd be that step of distance. And the same thing I think is going on in a much more fundamental, long-standing way with Mattiello versus the governor. What jumps out and makes it unusual is that they're in the same party. If Rhode Island had more of a divided government,
you're right,
the Democrat speaker versus the Republican governor, it would feel a lot more natural for them to be kind of sniping at each other. But if you think about it even more, if we had a more balanced political system, it wouldn't necessarily be the governor sniping at the Speaker of the House. It would be somebody else close to them in their party, and that's sort of how our political system has worked these things out, to allow each side to capitalize on the other side's weaknesses while still maintaining, you know, some ability to work together, not make it personal. And I think we've really lost that, being in large part a one-party state now. I think you'd have to say it since Governor Kocheri left office.
Yes.
So I think that's a big part of it as well.
You know what else is just this business, there's a couple different parts of this equation, but the fact that she announces there'll be no state police investigation because basically she did her own investigation and Twin River's lying and Smiley's telling the truth. Boy, what a luxury. Can you imagine if Cianci could have said, you know, I talked to my chief of staff and he didn't take any bribes, so there's no investigation. Or if the mayor of Fall River said, nope, I looked into it and there's no allegations that any bribe. I mean, boy, what a luxury to have. Why doesn't she do the right thing and step back and say, in the name of transparency, I'm going to allow the state police to investigate this? Because I'll tell you, Justin, but on its surface, the way Twin River describes it, if it went down like that, that is extortion. They were telling them to be quiet or that they were going to penalize them. They were quiet. They did penalize them. And I think it played out that way. I just find the fact that she is just conducting herself that way, that she announces like there's no reason to investigate because she investigated. I also want to get your thoughts on someone who's been very contentious since he came on the scene, and that is that Steve Erickson. The guy is, just very argumentative and defensive and in bullying way on social media. We've watched him, or I have, we've gone to go after anyone that questions him in any way. He goes after Ken Block. He posts some things that sometimes are just bizarre. And now all of a sudden, they announce that the Board of Elections, has free rent, they're in a state building, and it's free rent. And all of a sudden now, they're going to take a lease where there had been 350 people working, and there's only going to be 17 workers of the Board of Elections, and it's off Plainfield Pike. You have all the state office space at the Pastore Complex in Cranston, where the DMV is and all these other agencies and so forth. And suddenly now it's Plainfield Pike with a private developer. They're going to pay $6.5 million, and the guy didn't even bid on it. And I'll tell you, this guy Erickson, it's like he's almost offended that anyone's even asking him questions about this no-bid contract that they – I've never seen them rush anything through as fast as they did with that.
Erickson is in some ways emblematic of Governor Raimondo. He is her appointee, and the way he's acted, you have to believe she's assured him somewhere along the line, hey, you know, keep going at it. You want to go after Ken Block? You want to go after the Center for Freedom and Prosperity as well all the time, and me individually? I mean, go for it. I really don't care. You know, I've appointed you, and you'll remain appointed as long as I'm in the office. See, that's the impression you get. But what do you really, it's almost like he's covering up the actual kind of controversy of this whole thing, which is all these names that keep popping up. You know, you've got it wasn't even that they did no bid; it's that they did a bidding situation and then said, "Nah, we're not going to go with any of these. We're just going to pick this other person out of a hat." And it happens to be a person who the company, what's his name, Bradford Dean, his company hired Gordon Fox right out of prison.
Yep.
And he said it was after somebody else, unnamed, asked him if he had any openings. So that's involved. You've got Carpinato Group, who's been developing all over the state, and they are developing properties next to the Board of Elections building. So they're looking into taking that property over. You've got Bradford Dean. This is maybe my favorite part. He's also somehow connected through a real estate property with the American Standard Hemp Company,
yes,
which is the Mattiello staffers who were allegedly working their way toward a special deal on the marijuana and hemp business in Rhode Island. All these names start piling back into it. And here you've got the vice president or the vice chairman of the Board of Elections, Steve Erickson, just running around, flailing, you know, they're just saying whatever, attacking anybody who raises questions about anything. It's quite a show, and it does make you wonder whether, I mean, there is a plausible narrative here that this is all just just the madness that Rhode Island has become, rather than any kind of overt corruption or deliberate way of getting things over on people. This is just how things are done, and that's almost a scarier proposition. But I mean, and it goes, and it so clearly contradicts the obvious way to go about things. Not only the bidding thing, but why not have a plan? You know, shouldn't the state has an entire division of planning that has maps showing what they intend for every acre of the state of Rhode Island? How do you not have a plan to say, here's where the Board of Elections should go, this is how it's going to fit, we've already looked at where it's near the highway and you can get to everywhere across the state to pick up your ballots and all this stuff? None of that is involved. This is entirely just out of the blue. Hey, here's a nice place we'll pick, and never mind all the political connections of the people involved. It's mind-numbing. But I guess in some ways it does fit with the Twin River conversation we were just having. There's no plan to any of it. It's all just everybody trying to grab something and deal with all these crazy personalities.
It's that, Justin, and let's face it, the Board of Elections thing, it makes no sense. The guy didn't bid on it. Plainfield Pike is, I'm not saying, you know, but it's out of the way. You have available state office space. This was a space that 350 people worked in. Now all of a sudden it's only going to be 17. And what really strikes me about Erickson and Nelly Gobia, the Secretary of State, is almost this attitude, Justin Katz, of like they still don't get it, that they, their word should be enough. There's no, you know, as Reagan said, trust is verified. They don't believe in the verified part. He doesn't see why people might say, boy, that's odd. Right now you're not paying rent. Someone is going to get the contract in a no-bid situation. Suddenly they're going to get $6.5 million. They also happen to be tied in with the speaker's people regarding the hemp situation. And Erickson looks at it like, yeah, that's exactly right. Why would you think there's anything up with it? Because there's always been something up with it. And it reminds me also of Gorbea of, you know, she would talk about, well, you know, we've been doing a great job in the voter rolls and da-da-da. And then when you say, well, can we verify it? Well, no, just look at our website. We've done a great job. Well, we want to go through the voter rolls. Oh, no, you can't go through the voter. You have to take our word for it that we've done a great job cleaning up the voter rolls. There's no element of verification. I believe, Justin, these are my words, not Justin Katz. I believe there's something very odd about this Board of Elections deal. I'm sorry. I grew up in Rhode Island. When you see this type of situation, this facility is off, way off the beaten path. It doesn't make sense. You have state office space available that they could be sliding in there. This guy, when someone calls and, quote, asks about could you give Gordon Fox a job, they're not asking. They're saying, listen, give him a job, and then we're going to, you know, take care of you down the line. And then they just send Erickson out there to be arguing and be the face of this thing. Oh, no, we need to do this. You know what? A lot of times when these situations have happened, they didn't make sense. And the reason they didn't make sense is because there was something behind it. That's why a lot of these things have happened this way. And this is just the latest example to me. And I don't see, you know, the governor, who's all about efficiency and transparency, I haven't seen her weigh in on the Board of Elections. I'm not even saying that you go to the Paolino building or the other guy, but if anyone would take a ride to the Pastore complex in Cranston, the state has empty building space, empty. So if they move in there, you don't have to pay anything. And you could rehab it. You could rehab it for $500,000. You could do a $1 million rehab, and it's still going to be cheaper than the $6.5 million that we're paying this guy. There's something about this situation with Brad. This just doesn't work. And I heard Erickson trying to say, "So what? So what? He didn't bid on it. What does that mean?" Well, that's the point of having a competitive bid situation, so we can see the transparency. We can see this. And you know what else sticks out to me, Justin, is when they were having the questioning about the Board of Elections, and also when they were questioning about the hemp license, where even now the FBI has said, whoa, 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 like Rhode Island, be careful. The fact you're only going to award 6 licenses, they're $500,000 each, that's ripe for corruption. I mean, talk about a state that would look to cash in on it. You know what I object to is a representative from Bradford Dean was at you know, the meeting on the Board of Elections, they were there, and they declined comment. You know, my feeling is, excuse me, if you want to be part of the process, you don't have the right to reserve, to decline to comment. If you're there, you're going to answer questions. You're going to cooperate. We're going to find out who's behind this. I'm just tired of these people that want to get literally millions, and then they say, we're declining comment. When you enter the process, you forfeit the right to decline comment. You're going to sit there and answer every goddamn question that we have.
Well, you would think it would be in their interest, right? I mean, if every question has an answer that's on the up and up, then you ought to be willing to, hey, come on in. You know, let's call up all the news reporters. Come on in our office. We'll open up our books. We'll tell you how we got to this point, who asked who for what deal. I believe it was Raimondo's office actually negotiated this deal. So they're involved with this. And that's what you would expect if everything were just, hey, this is the best deal we could possibly find. It'd be a lot easier if the state had a plan and they were part of a plan and we're trying to find a location that fits a plan. But instead, they shuffled off this no-bid deal. They shuffled off the bid in order to do a no-bid deal. Nobody will answer questions. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the thing with Erickson all along, back to Ken Block asking questions about election integrity, it's not even that he goes out there and says, oh, well, you shouldn't be asking questions. He actually actively gets aggressive to people because he says they're hurting the system
yes.
by asking questions. So, you must be some alt-right figure paid by some shadowy Koch organization because by asking the Board of Elections questions, you are hurting our entire election system. I mean, it's almost like the essence of corruption right there. You can't ask us questions because we are the state. And we do everything right, and you must be trying to hurt us. That's kind of the attitude that comes across. And then when you get people not willing to answer questions, and then, you know, leading to lawsuits, which Paolino's involved in, and
yes,
another developer
good.
As well, when you get into the lawsuits, I mean, that's all of this looks like it ought to be solvable through just good management. And we really have a bad problem with that. And, of course, one of the reasons the FBI is putting out warnings and Fall River's mayor got in some trouble is we set things up where there's all this money and all this power and decisions in the hands of a few people, and that just invites corruption and it makes it impossible to trust what's going on. And that's the real risk. Even if none of this is even if you sorted it all out and you got down to, well, this was just the way it happened because of, you know, whatever, bad decisions being made, no corruption per se, the risk that there's always corruption and the impression of corruption, that's what hurts the system.
Right.
Not people asking questions and wanting to get some idea where are these decisions being made, where's our money going, who's calling for these things. And I mean, this is the thread of this entire conversation today is, you know, this you can't trust the state police anymore. The governor is saying, oh, don't ask questions about this investigation. You know we're doing strange things versus the casino operators. You've got Erickson out there yelling at people about the Board of Elections, and then this whole deal inspiring lawsuits and going from zero rent to roughly, what, $600,000 a year rent for the Board of Elections with no plan in place for why they're necessarily doing it this way. And by the way, there are developers who've had their eye on this property because they own property on either side of it. The whole thing just stinks. And even if there weren't corruption, it ought to be fixed and everything ought to be open. And especially under this governor, we've gone in the opposite direction where everybody's told to just, you know what, there's nothing going on here and there's something wrong with you if you think there is something going on here. So turn around, let's all be quiet, and here's my PR people if you want to ask any questions that they're not going to answer.
That's right. And one thing, you know, a couple things I'll say. Well, first of all, the Board of Elections, if they need more space or they want to move it out of the building, then they should just move them into the Cranston Street Armory. I mean, this is ridiculous. There's plenty of space there. All the machines are there. There's no reason to be paying $6.5 million. I'll say this about Joe Paolino. Joe Paolino is not going to get shaken down. Joe Paolino was not giving anybody a kickback. He has good properties. He submitted the property for bid. Joe is not going to play the game. If someone said to him, hey, you know, I think I could get this to you, but we're going to need a little finder's fee or some of the other tricks they use and the phrases and all this other stuff, Joe Paolino is not, he's not in on the game on this. Joe Paolino's on the outside saying, so let me get this straight. You put up that you need office space. I put in a bid. Somebody that didn't bid is being awarded the space, and they just happen to be partners with the people from the speaker's office on this hemp operation out down at Jefferson Boulevard. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I mean, come on. Talk about something that doesn't feel right. Justin Katz, before I let you go, I'm just curious your thought on Senate President Dominic Ruggiero, because as much as you mentioned him earlier and said, you know, he's kind of the cool head here, and I'm not trying to, you know, I just, he is someone that to me, I can't take him seriously, and I'll tell you why. His first loyalty will always be to the laborers. You know, what a lot of people in Rhode Island don't realize is the state still, whether people like it or not, one of the most popular people was, you know, Buddy Cianci. And it was known as kind of this entertaining, but almost, he was seen, he would throw around some of the organized crime jokes. You have the Crime Town podcast. I don't think people realize that in other states, and when I lived in New York City, when I would mention, you mentioned Providence, people think organized crime. They think wise guys. They think, oh, is that a bunch of Tony Sopranos up there? When you have the Senate president is Dominic Ruggiero, and his first loyalty to me remains the laborers. And, you know, his dad was pretty well known in some ways. I just don't think it's a mystery why there are certain business people that, I mean, again, I've only met him a handful of times, and I get people that say he's a gentleman, da da da, but I just don't think at times we put our best foot forward, and it's why a lot of businesses, they're very suspect about coming into the state. We need to run an absolute above board operation. I mean, it kind of is like the reputation in Vegas or reputation of certain places, that Rhode Island's reputation for corruption, organized crime, guys that act like Tony Soprano, it precedes it. I don't think the state goes out of enough to do enough. You have to be above reproach. You have to operate completely in a way that people would feel comfortable doing business with the state. And I just don't think people understand how damaging that is. That as much as someone may meet like a Senate President Ruggiero, or then it's a Nick Mattiello, they cut out of here. Like, forget it. These guys are like, you know, they're like out of Goodfellas. They're like out of Crime Town. They're like out of Brotherhood. That they're out of, you know, extras in The Sopranos.
Yeah, well, that's certainly the impression one gets. Although, one thing I've always found intriguing about Senate President Ruggiero, including when he was the majority leader in the Senate, he doesn't give the impression of being personally corrupt so much as sort of the emblem of the fundamental corruption that is Rhode Island government, you know? So he could be in it thinking it's legitimately he's doing public service because he believes in unions, he believes in government, he believes in this, and this is how this is all supposed to work. You're supposed to get work for the laborers because that's
right.
Good. That's,
you're right.
I mean, he probably genuinely believes all that and wants and thinks he's doing everything by the book. The problem is it is fundamentally just not the way things should be done in Rhode Island. It's corrupt. The whole system is corrupt. He, in some ways, that makes him one of the more interesting characters in the entire panoply of Rhode Island politicians. I mean, you've got the overt corruption. You've got that sort of lingers around Cianci. You've got the whole personality of that. You've got Raimondo with the kind of across the board inability to do things well. Around, you've got the speakers of the House who keep having these issues, and now Mattiello, all these little grand juries popping up sort of around his operation. But then you've just got, you know, Senate President Ruggiero, who's just, hey, yeah, I was a higher up in the laborers union, and now here I am in the Rhode Island Senate, and this is, you know, I'm trying to always get work for the laborers because that's a good thing and unions are great. I just, it seems to me, more than anything, he defines Rhode Island corruption, which is almost in a way worse from a business perspective. If you go into a meeting with the lead politicians and you conclude it's not just this person who's corrupt, it's this entire system that this
right.
person.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point.
I think that's that's where I think the reputation of Rhode Island is actually probably going over a cliff right now, is it's just becoming so clear that this is how we do business here.
You're right.
And I mean, it's been known for centuries. When's the famous, was it Mencken who said, Rhode Island's a state for sale for cheap?
Yes.
Or something like that. I mean, it's been known for centuries, but it's really becoming, I mean, if it's just, you know, a handful of mob guys, that's fine. You know, you can almost deal with that because there's state apparatus around that. But we've just completely lost all protections and all safeguards and the rest from government in that regard. The past, I don't know, I want to say 15 years.
I think he's exactly right, folks. He's the managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com, Justin Katz. Justin, excellent as always. We'll talk to you again.
I look forward to it every time. Thanks, John.
All right, folks, there it is, Justin Katz.